Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the same old Wombles. This is season two, episode, we think 12, not entirely sure. Today I'm joined with by Alex Folks and mon frère, Nark Cooper. Today we're going to have a little bit of a look back at the Barrow game, look forwards to Accrington Stanley, which by the time this goes out might have already happened, and the Morecambe away game. We're going to talk about SGM motions as well. So, welcome everyone to the Same Old Wombles. My name is Matt Cooper.
No one doubts the way you feel. No, your passion's very real. I must say we're all impressed the way the fans approach this test. The days have gone when football clubs live and fly just on fans' love. Davis isn't just a game, and tough decisions must be made.
Chaps, what's our thoughts on the Barrow game? A good point away.
There were no goals. There were no much shooting. It was very far away. None of us watched it, apart from on Twitter or listening to WDON, and therefore we can't really comment. It was a point. It was away. It was far away.
Nice
Job done.
job.
Next item.
Job. This could be the shortest podcast ever.
I
I
was
like the
down.
idea that people listen to WDON. Sorry, Alex, what were you saying?
I was going to say that I was at the other end of the country. I was down in Devon, and I was rowing at the time, so therefore I wasn't even really following it on Twitter. But from what I've seen of the highlights, such as they were, from what I've read of the read back of the Twitter comments and the various social media comments, yeah, there are the people who are disappointed that we didn't nick it. But let's face it, a point away against a team which isn't too bad, a long way away when we've got lots of games coming up. I'll take that. Our away record continues to be fantastic. Our ability to not concede goals continues to be pretty strong. I am reminded of that period, when was it? In the New Year, Christmas New Year last year, where we went however many games it was unbeaten, and we scored once and we conceded once in a run of six games. And it does have that feel that we're not scoring, but we're not conceding, and we're taking draws, nil-nil draws. I'd like us to come out of this with a nice solid win rather than what happened last time, which was then we went on that horrendous run and we started flirting with relegation. So, yeah, I mean, it's good to have Ali back. It's good to have a solid, good team that we look forward to watching. It just would be nice to be a bit more exciting at times. That's all.
I'm interested by the Ali Hamady thing because obviously he is, from what I understand, he's exhausted. I mean, he's traveled out to Iraq. He's represented his country. He's flown back, and I can't imagine he got back until Wednesday, Thursday. Then we got the game on Saturday. And also, I understand Josh Davison wasn't available to us. He had a personal issue, so he had to disappear off, which is, I mean, my question basically is, are we still light up front? Because, although we looked like, the previous time we had four strikers, we were all quite excited, weren't we? We had Akinfenwa, Tom Elliott, Niall Taylor and Aziz, and that was very attacking. Whereas now, if we look at our four, it's Ali Hamady, Josh Davison, Bugle and Pell, which is interesting because I wouldn't naturally say that Pell was really forward, and obviously Pell and Bugle are not the strict forwards. They are what would we call them,
Attacking midfielders.
number tens, or so it's interesting. And Josh, for whatever reason, I mean, I think he's probably a decent player, but the truth is, when you put him up against someone like Al Hamady, he's coming out second best.
Right. The other thing to remember is Josh Davidson has just had a kid, right? And any of us who've ever been gone through fatherhood, like that is not a time when you kind of get a lot of rest. The guy is going to be absolutely cream cracker just because of his personal life. And I think what we sometimes forget is that footballers are humans as well, and they have like kind of normal things that go on in their lives, and sometimes personal stuff rolls over. So in a way, we have to think when I would be situation when it comes to training and what's going on with Josh Davidson, we need to take that into account. The guy probably needs a load of cotton wool, put him around him a bit because he's going to be knackered, and we just need to manage that. So that is the situation. Do I think we're light up front? Yeah, I do. I think we're maybe missing one or two up front. Far better than we were last season or the season before. But, you know, we're just that little bit not quite happy. And that's the bit that will take us from being a team that's going to be around the playoffs to a team that could be making that challenge to the top three. What you can see what's happened recently is that this is a division where there is not an awful lot between the top of the table. And we, you know, you go if we go a run of get a bit of form going, we could easily be pushing into that top three. Again, you know, it's that close.
Yeah, what do you think, Alex?
I think that any team will always say, "Oh, we could do with another centre forward." That's always going to be the case for any team, whether it's Man City or us or some non-league team, is always going to say they want an extra centre forward. I think looking at us, two things strike. Firstly, that as Niall's just said, our four forwards are not all number nines. We've got a couple of number nines ish and a couple of number tens, and that's great as a balance when they're all fit and all available. But actually, we should have known going into the season that that wasn't going to be the case because, brilliant that it is, Ali is away representing his country for the two international breaks, and it would only be effectively by luck that we'd get games postponed for international call-ups. You know, Tan's got called up. We were then relying on Morgan Williams getting called up for the under Welsh under 21s in order to have a game postponed. And once that became clear that it wasn't going to happen and he went out on loan, our ability to get games postponed wasn't going to happen. So we were going to lose Ali. The other thing is, you know, it's brilliant. And congratulations to Josh and his partner on their baby. That's fantastic news. But from a football club point of view, that was predictable that we were going to lose Josh for a bit because, as Niall's just said, new fathers, they're knackered. They have to spend time quite rightly. You know, football appears to be one of the only sports which isn't covered, or the only professions which isn't covered by paternity leave. If we were in a normal job, we would lose Josh for a number of weeks because he'd be entitled to paternity leave, which is a really good thing. So going into the season, we would have known that Josh was about to become a father. We would have known that Ali was likely probable to be called up for international duty. And so that sort of safety position of having four strikers, we should have seen that perhaps we'd have needed a fifth. So I'm certainly not putting that on the players. I'm putting that maybe on the management to say, really, we needed another striker. Was that another striker that we bought in, or was that Zach or somebody that we have sent out on loan? I don't know. But maybe that's something that we could have done a little bit better. But I'm picking at the edges here because we have done really well to start the season. We're on a really good run in general. Okay, we had that defeat at home, but we've only lost two this season. So let's be positive about this. I think we can do really well. If we beat Accrington tonight, then, you know, the life is looking rosy still. I hope we've got Josh back. I understand from Terry's update this morning that we do. I hope Ali is feeling a bit rested and we bang in some goals. Let's get 3-0 up by 50 minutes and we can rest them.
It's you're right. I mean, it's interesting points. I guess with tonight's game against Accrington, what is so weird? What is wrong with our home form? I mean, what is it that's happened there? Because away from home, it's been amazing. I mean, we're you know one of the only sides that are undefeated away from home, and we played more games than a lot of the sides in that we're comparing with up higher up the league.
There
What
isn't, there
is
isn't, there isn't any.
our what is our what's wrong with our home form?
There is an old argument that comes back to, it's hard to kind of admit this, but Plough is probably too nice, as in, like, it's a lovely location, it's lovely stuff. You know, people, you talk about the old Plough Lane, and the reason why we had a brilliant home record at the old Plough Lane was that it was a bit of a decrepit stadium. Some of the toilets were broken. You generally got a cold cup of tea with salt. You felt like it was shit. You didn't really want to be there. All you wanted to do was get out of this stadium because it was horrible, right? But for us, we loved it because it was our home. And so actually, players weren't enjoying the experience. Whereas you go into the new Plough Lane, and it's a lovely ground. You walk out, it's a lovely atmosphere. It's all very pleasant. And, they kind of like make it kind of comfortable. Do I agree totally with that? Maybe not. But that is an argument that will be put forward and has been put forward in the past. We've got to kind of make it a bit more of a not very, we've got to turn it on. We've got to kind of be a bit more aggressive. Well, I don't know, better at home. And it's a bit embarrassing at the moment that, I mean, the thing is, we all love going to Plough Lane anyway, irrespective of the result. A win makes it a fantastic experience. I've just not experienced very many. I honestly don't know how many wins I've seen at Plough Lane. And it's not going to be, it may only be about five or six that I've seen at home.
It's an interesting philosophy this now, because I'm keen to know, because let's face it, there's a lot of crap grounds out there. I mean, Gillingham's is not a decent ground. Is their home record much better because they've got a shitty ground? So we do need to do some sort of exploring about the shittiness of the ground compared to home wins.
If somebody out there would have done that research, we should look it out. How shit is your ground compared to how good is your home record?
Yeah.
Shit grounds, good home record. That would be my
Yeah.
theory.
I mean, I don't know. It's tricky. Alex, what do you think?
I don't buy that argument. I think that we develop a fortress mentality when we go away, and that's not to do with the quality of the ground. I think that's more to do with
Yes.
the attitude we have instilled in our players that certainly somewhere like Barrow or Harrogate or somewhere that is a long distance away, it's tough. It's a long trip. We go into our bunker. We are not going to let them beat us because, for whatever reason. So I think there's a particular away mentality we've managed to adopt. I don't buy that Plough Lane's too cosy. I think that we've got a great football ground, and I want it to be comfortable for the players as well as for the fans. But we haven't yet turned on that mentality of let's do it for the fans. We've got a really good home support, even tonight, which is going to be a lower turnout because it's a Tuesday night game. And Accrington, lovely though they are, they don't bring a huge number. So, how do we turn it on for the fans? How do we make sure that the players are feeling that? I don't think that we should be giving them cold, salty tea. I think that we should be turning it on in some other way. And I don't have the answer to that, but I don't think that deprivation is the best route out of home failure.
Yeah, I mean, tonight is an interesting one anyhow, and I have to say I'm gutted not to be there because it is the Oktoberfest, and I have been explained before the podcast. I was thinking, why isn't it usually on a Saturday? But it's a marketing thing, put on Oktoberfest on a Tuesday night. Hopefully, you get a few people along because, as you say, Alex, I think we'll be lucky to see what 150 Accrington fans down there tonight. But hopefully, with Oktoberfest, we're going to bring a few people in. I don't know what beers or lagers are available, but obviously, with Oktoberfest, we bring the best traditions, which is the Umpa band and people dressed up in Lederhosen. So there's nothing better than a little bit of stereotypical tradition. Come on, Oktoberfest. When did it become a big thing? When did that start happening? That all of a sudden we have our own Oktoberfest.
You
So,
don't want the answer to that from a Wimbledon perspective, because I do know the answer to that. It's very boring. It's very boring. It's basically in the olden days when I might have perhaps been on the Don's Trust board and might perhaps have been involved with some of the
wait a
marketing side
minute,
for
you were on the Don's Trust board? I don't think anyone knew about this.
was on the Don's Trust board, whatever. And we were kind of looking at how do we improve certain things and stuff like that and make it a bit more entertaining and making it more of an event. And one of the ideas that came up with was Oktoberfest. As we looked at the calendar and we looked at what's like, where do you get low fixtures? You get low fixtures on the Tuesday and a half term when it's dark, nobody turns up, and you basically put on an Umpa band, give loads of stuff like that, and loads of local students connected to their freshers activities are all promoted and they all come down, yada, yada, yada. That's what happens. That's what the conversation was. Yes, I was involved in all of that with Bal, who also deserves a bit of credit in that area.
Ladies and gentlemen, if ever you wanted a reason to stand for the DTB, nominations close soon, I think. This is it. You can make things happen. Put on your manifesto things like this, and you too can make things happen. Oktoberfest. I know that we talked about it last week. Standing for the DTB. It's an important thing to do. I'm hoping that they're contested elections because people are nervous. I mean, I have thought about it in the past, and I've decided against it just mainly because of what I've heard from various people. But yes, please do stand. Let's have a contested election, for God's sake.
Let's have a couple of minutes talking about Accrington, because they are owned by Andy Holt, who's one of the good guys in football for a non-fan-owned club. It's one of the nicest clubs, a good owner who wants the best for his club. He doesn't want immediate promotion to the Premier League and billions of riches, and he's not a sugar daddy in that sense. But he's just put the club up for sale. And he's determined, from everything I've read, and I believe this completely, he's determined to only sell to somebody who, like him, has the good of the club in their mind, who is determined to put the right amount of money in, not too much thinking they can buy success, not too little that we'll see a club which isn't a rich club, which isn't going to get huge numbers of fans through the door. Too little we'll see that club fail. And as he says, if they fall into non-league, that's the end of the club. So he is determined to find the right buyer. Now, my question is, with full praise to Andy Holt, but do you think that there are people out there like him who will take on a club like Accrington, which is not ever going to grace the Premier League? My full respect to them, but they're not a big club. They're never going to be a big club. How do you find an owner if you don't have enough fans who are willing to take it into fan ownership?
Right. Okay. I mean, also, this is going very clearly into my stuff from a fair game perspective. So, one of the big problems with why Andy Hart's put the club up to sale is because the managerial staff at the club putting a load of pressure on him to put extra money into the club that he actually can't afford. So I think he put 90 grand in this year. And actually, you know, if you have 90 grand, you know, not a lot of people have 90 grand to throw away. And further up the pyramid, it's even more. The problem with it is that we have a culture where pressure is on to spend more than you earn at every level. And until that is addressed, then people like Andy Holt are going to drift away from the game, however much they have the good intentions. So you're left with your pool of people who are willing to basically lose money. And then who are the kind of people that are willing to lose money? Are they going to be, or, you know, aware that that's the most likely outcome? Who are those kind of business people? Who are those kind of people that are going to be doing that? And to be honest, when you go further down the pyramid and there's less scrutiny in the owners and directors test, there's an awful lot of, let's be honest, dodgy owners who have got dodgy reasons for wanting to put money into clubs. That's your problem. So until you address that cultural issue, which in a fair game perspective, you start rewarding well-run clubs. And there is like nearly £500 million each year that goes from the Premier League down to the football pyramid. If that was actually allocated on the basis of how well-run a club is, then you start attracting people who want to go into football for the right reasons and look at putting custodianship at the heart of the football club. If that doesn't exist and isn't around, then you're going to have the good guys like Andy Holt doing what he's doing. The other example I can give you is Doncaster Rovers, who also were really committed towards doing it, and their owner basically gave up and said, right, well, screw this, because I'm going to be losing, I've got all this pressure to spend, and I've tried to be frugal and sensible for ages. It's just basically said, right, I'm really old. I'm going to throw my entire savings and earnings into Doncaster Rovers, knowing I'm never going to get it back, because they've just given up with the system because it doesn't help football. So until that's addressed, we're going to have this recycled time and time again, and you'll lose the good guys. If we had a proper system like that, what you'd also do is you start attracting investors who will go, football is actually a safe place to invest. Or you attract sponsors for going, it's a safe place to invest. And again, when I go back to us as a club at Wimbledon, we were trying to renegotiate the loans and all that sort of stuff. And the big problem there was that we would go through the entire process, and we've got some really good accountants, really good way. We're trying to run the club really right. We'd go through the entire process. We'd be getting yes, all the way down the loan system. The last question would be, are you a football club? Yes. Well, no, you're not getting a loan, because of the football ecosystem is one that you'd have to be a bit of a numpty to give you a good rate of interest to loan to a football club, which is why we get screwed, because football's ecosystem is a mess. So until that's dealt with, and we've got a regulator coming in, that has to be really strong and really rigorous. So you'll see loads of stuff coming through from the Premier League saying, we don't want this, we don't want that. But what we need to do is have a regulator that is very strong, that brings in this new system that looks at financial flow and means the Andy Holts, the Doncaster Rovers leave. There you go.
That's yeah. I mean, I think basically, Alex, it's going to be very difficult for Accrington Stanley, my feeling, to get someone in like Andy Holt, who's got the club's best interest at heart. And I think this is the issue with us as well. So one of the big things that's come up, we've been asked to vote on, is changing our financial model. So going from the current model, which is 75 plus one, to 50 plus one, and that's. It is tricky, and I'm sorry, I'm going to have to bring Niall on this because I keep forgetting why the 75 plus is so important to us rather than 50 plus. Because I think most people looking on the outside, you go 50 plus one guarantees fan ownership, it guarantees the safety of the club. We, certain things can't happen. However, you've often said to me that the 75 plus gives us much more security. What's the very quickly? What's the reason behind the 75 plus being more secure than 50 plus?
Okay, it's company rules. So you can have, if you have 75 plus, then you don't actually need to listen to your minority stakeholders. If you have 75 plus, if you have between 75 and 50, then your minority stakeholders can effectively block or changes on your kind of how your club operates, your financial model, all the rest of it. And they can continue to do that until they get something that they see as acceptable and voted through. So if you were saying, right, we want to move the club to Milton Keynes, sorry, I mentioned it, I really shouldn't, the club, the town in Buckinghamshire, then they could say, right, you've had the 75, the 74.9% of people going, no, we're not going to do that again and again and again and again and again. And it will continually be blocked by the 25.1% until they say, we will move to that town in Buckinghamshire, and then they'll vote for it. So you can have a blocking motion for everything. So you can basically become a stagnant organisation if you go below 75.
Okay, so I'm looking at it, and I know that there are certain safeguards being put in place with this 50 plus, which is the model that's going forward so far. But and certain things that have been said is that you can split up that extra 49%, for instance, so that no one has more than 15% of the shares, so that hopefully you wouldn't get in a situation like that. Are the assurances that we have in place that have been posed to us, are they enough? Alex, what would you do? Would you, I mean, are you still committed to the 75 plus? Because I mean, I feel nervous about it because it's been our structure since the day we re-emerged as AFC Wimbledon. It makes me slightly nervous.
It makes me nervous, partly for the reason that Niall has said, and partly because, however well run we are, the danger is that we get extra cash in, which, let's face it, it wouldn't be the hugest amount. We're not talking about Premier League money at all. But we get a few extra million in potentially. And what do we do with it? Do we try and buy success? Do we try and invest in infrastructure like extending the ground or building up training facilities or whatever? But you have to be incredibly careful to make sure you spend that money wisely and you don't just blow it on one more striker. Because you blow it on one more striker and maybe we get into the playoffs and fail in the playoffs, or maybe we get promoted, or maybe that striker gets injured. It doesn't guarantee success, but what you've done at that stage is you have mortgaged your future. Now, we would still have 50 plus one. We could still avoid moving to a town in Buckinghamshire. We still have that guarantee. But it became, as Niall has just said, it makes the whole debate about what the club does much more complicated. And you get these investors who come in who, let's face it, realistically, they're not going to propose moving to Buckinghamshire, but they may propose a business model that doesn't suit what we've been doing so far and our long-term vision for the club. And it becomes much more complicated. So if you have a plan for how you're going to use that money and it's for the long-term interest of the club, and you have investors who come in who are altruistic, who are interested in investing because of our vision, that's fine. I can see that, but there's no guarantee of that. And therefore, that's why I'm nervous about it. So yeah, it does retain fan control. It does mean that we can lead the club and certainly block something that we absolutely don't want, but it creates uncertainty. And so I'm not in favor of it unless somebody can show how it leads to success. And nobody's, for me, yet done that.
Can I just talk about two things there? I mean, I think you have to ask the really fundamental question, why do you invest in a football club? I mean, that's a big fundamental question. So like, why would you even do it? The other thing is, I want to take the Luton Town example at the moment. So Luton Town have got into the Premier League. And what Luton Town's model is at the moment is not to massively overspend on players. What they are doing is they're taking the money from the Premier League. They're building a brand new stadium, brand new training facilities, loads of infrastructure in the community on the knowledge that they may well go down again, but they're going to end it with a much more sustainable club that will have an even better chance of going up and living and thriving in the long term and the medium term. We need to move towards that kind of thinking about what is actually going to make Wimbledon successful long term. We are in a really good corner of South West London. We've got loads of people that could potentially come to the ground. Our medium to long term thing should be looking at extending the ground, making the actual financial revenue on a day-to-day basis much bigger. That will make the club financially sustainable for long term. We need to move towards a situation where we are not dependent on the owner benefits model, which is what is the curse of loads of other clubs. Because if that owner walks away, gets pissed off, or thinks his investment's stupid, then we're suddenly in trouble. And that's what happened to us historically. So we can have all these investors coming in, but if they're not actually giving us the money with no strings, which is kind of the only way you can kind of guarantee it, then you've got to ask the question, why are they doing it? What you want to do is move towards a system where you have a club that is financially sustainable for the long haul and is growing and is building its financial revenues. You know, it's like running a decent business. You don't shouldn't be profiting, shouldn't be like looking to make a loss. And that's kind of the model that underlies all of this 50 plus one stuff.
Yeah,
I think
that's
we're in
it.
real risk about
Yeah,
forgetting that.
it's in. Yeah, I mean, I think, and there's a good point. And also, I think the other thing, which is quite clear on Twitter, I saw the other day, John Green saying, you know, he would like to go with some other people and invest in it to get to 75, because at the moment, the DTB own more than that, don't we? We're 80 odd percent owned by the DTB, so we have additional revenue that we can sell off anyhow. But then where's the interest for that? So where would be the interest for going further, particularly if, you know, as a safeguarding option, you could only buy a certain number of shares as an individual. So you couldn't buy 49% of the club. You'd have to buy a maximum of 15%. So where's the incentive?
I mean, that goes back to like you have an owner who wants to come in, it's their own personal plaything. And that's the one thing that we've always wanted Wimbledon not to be, somebody else's personal plaything. That's the only other reason you would buy a football club. It's like, you know, I've got my Sky Electrics track, and now I'm going to be the big grown up. And instead of having a Sky Electrics track, I'm going to have a little football club to play around with. Those are the other kind of owners you have in football who might not know anything about the football club and certainly won't necessarily give a toss about what the fans of the community think because it's not what they bought the football club for. That's where I think we really need to move towards. I think it's about, for me, it's about changing the system that means that the way Wimbledon is set up is the way all clubs should be set up. And that's where we start leveling the playing field.
Okay, all right. Well, so just keep an eye on any cousins, nephews, people that you know who've got Sky Electrics, because ultimately that's the gateway drug into owning and destroying football clubs. Thanks, chaps. That's all right. I mean, I guess, you know, it's not the only contentious thing going on. That, you know, there are various. We've got the SGM coming up, Graham Stacey has put in a trillion things. And I think what's interesting about Graham Stacey, all the different motions that he's put forward is, you know, he was on the DTB. He obviously saw things within that structure which he thinks needs changing. I always think it's kind of weird that, you know, at the end of all these motions, the DTB say, we propose voting against this, you know, don't vote with the resolution. And I'm wondering how many people on the DTB board at the moment feel that way, or whether obviously it's a majority decision that they have to put that forwards. But I would say some of Graham's motions are really worth having a proper look at and having a think for yourself. About whether you agree with them or not. I mean, there's one now which is about keeping the time to 2 years serving on the DTB rather than going to 3 years, which is what's happening at the next elections, and whether we think that's a good idea or not. Just have a look and have a think about it. I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are, Mark. Personally, I can understand that sort of like sense of having that continuity, you know, continuity. Thank you very much. With it, but you know, then it just puts people in place who've got a lot of power, maybe, who can't get voted out for periods of time. Alex, what do you think? Are you keep it as two, go for three? I mean, I think there's a mix, isn't there? Because sorry,
I mentioned this last week. I instinctively, you know, I understand why they're looking at three. Instinctively, I don't like it because we've had a lot of people resign midterm for various reasons. And I think until you can get people who are going to serve their full term, for all that those people who have been picked to replace them as seconded members tend to be people who have also stood for election. They weren't voted in directly by the membership. And so I worry that we are going to just continue with that pattern. So until people are actually staying for the full 3 year term, I worry that's going to be an increasing problem. Yeah, I understand the needs for security and the need for all this, but instinctively, you know, it's my day job. I believe in elections. I believe that people should be empowered to do what they were elected to do. I think they should be given time to do that. But my overall thought is that 2 years is the right period for that. But having decided to do this, let's give it a chance. Of all of Graham's motions, this is the one that I think is a bit premature. I would give it a little bit of time to see whether this actually works. But, you know, on balance, I think that 2 years is better than 3 years. I'm coming out very much sat on the fence on this one. I do understand.
I am. Having served on the board with Graham, just a bit of an insight, so a lot of these motions would have almost certainly been split the board. So I would doubt very much that the kind of board recommendation would have been like 8-0 or 9-0, whatever the amount of people on the board now is. I'm kind of supportive of nearly all of Graham's motions. Personally, having been there, I think that 2 years, I prefer 2 years to 3 years. I actually also don't like the fact that the board is now pushing much more towards always meeting in person, because what you start doing is you make it really difficult for people who have either personal lives or aren't necessarily right next to the grounds to actually be able to participate, and you start shrinking your pool even further. So I've got a lot of issues about all of that and how it's structured. I think there's an awful lot of dynamism we need to add to that board. I really hope lots of other people stand and we do have contested elections, but you know, I think there's a reason why Graham's put all those motions down. I think we can legitimately back a lot of those.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest one, obviously, is the one that's not been put forward by Graham, which is the vote of no confidence in the board. I guess from my point of view, it feels like a very strange time to do that because we're coming up to the elections anyhow. So, you know, half of the board are going to be changing. I mean, I guess that the this particular motion is about getting rid of the whole board, as stands, and then having a whole new elections in place. But I'm not into, I mean, well, personally, I mean, I wouldn't be going for a vote of no confidence at the moment. And also, it does feel like, you know, the issues that we had earlier on the season with Danny Macklin, that was dealt with fairly quickly, and there's now a process in place about getting, and I think the deadline's just passed for the managing director role. I think that passed on Friday, so we're getting new people in place. Things are moving, and I understand also from listening to the official podcast last week that this is the, we get information from, is that they've got some really good candidates. I hope that's true, but I don't know. It feels odd for me to be doing a vote of no confidence in the whole board at the moment. Alex, what do you think?
I don't like votes of no confidence in the whole board. I think that tars everybody with the same brush. Yeah, they are a collective. They have to implement what they have decided by majority. But there are still individuals on the board who, whatever you might think of the direction of the club overall, there are individuals with different points of view. Now, I don't have a lack of confidence in the board as a whole. I don't think I even have a lack of confidence in individuals. I think that it is far too broad a statement to say that we should be getting rid of all of them. I think this is, and I don't want to impugn the motives of those who've put this motion forward, but I don't think that we are in a crisis that demands that we get rid of the entire board and the chaos that that would lead to. I'm not somebody who would put forward the argument that we shouldn't be doing this now because we don't have a managing director and we're appointing them. I don't think that the two necessarily correlate, but I do think that we are at a stage where the club is generally well run. It is generally moving in the right direction, and I think that credit should be given to Mick and indeed to Danny and others involved for all that has all the reasons that that is happening. And so, you know, by all means, if you disagree with individual aspects of what the club is doing, seek to change those. Put forward motions to SGMs. Put yourself forward for the DTB. Yell and scream, do whatever. And I think that's right and proper, and that's how a democratically run football club should be operating. I think that the no confidence is a bit too far. That's not to say that the people who've put it forward don't have the right to do so. Let's hear the arguments. Let's see what the vote comes out at, and let's accept whatever the membership decide as a result of that vote. I just personally, I couldn't support it.
And I think this is a really important thing that you touched on there, Alex, is that actual fact we give our members that chance, don't we? You know, people have got that chance to put forward motions like this, and that is not happening at any other club, really. It's our unique structure, the way that we are set up, that allows people to express and have these opinions, which I think is a great thing for democracy and a great thing for the way that our club is run. I can see Niles chomping at the bit. Chomping to have a quick word in.
Yeah, I think the one ethos, I think, I mean, I'm obviously, I don't think a no confidence motion is hugely sensible, but what I think we need to embed within the club is the idea of constant improvement. So at no point should anyone on the board or anyone running the club think we've got it perfect, because we never will. And that what we do have is we have a very articulate fan base, and what we need to be doing is having people put forward not problems but solutions. Saying, like, this is how I would like to improve it. This is what I've identified as an area that we could potentially do that. And for the club to have a mechanism to be able to engage with those solutions and engage with those outcomes. And I think that would be a really positive step. So I think if we could improve ourselves, it would be almost like an idea pool where we actually really look quite detailed at that. And I think if somebody was on the standing for the DTB, to have somebody who's saying, right, well, actually, what I want to do is look at encouraging all these ideas and thoughts to come through and really taking them seriously and putting them forward, because we have got that talent within our fan base and that's how we can improve. Oktoberfest, we mentioned earlier on, came through that sort of process. And there are other things. You look at the new drinks on the in the concourse, you look at what's happened in terms of how our catering has gone. Those would have all been ideas that would have been circulated probably by a couple of individuals that have made it through and gone through and improved the experience of our fans. What we need is more of that. And that's about constant improvement. So no confidence motion, in a way, okay, but tell me why, what you would do to make it different. How would you improve it? How can we do that? That's the key.
I think there's also an issue about the expectations that we give to our fans. We're a fan-owned club, and some people believe, legitimately believe, that that means that they, as fans, have the ability to make wholesale changes. But in reality, we're also a business, and businesses, whatever you think of the business gurus who do TED Talks and whatever, businesses are not so adaptable, are not so agile, to use a business phrase, that they can make sweeping changes and change their whole model overnight. It is going to be incremental change. But if we have given the impression to fans that we are able to fundamentally change the way that we run our football club overnight and just change everything at the drop of a hat, then I think that we have sold them a pup. I think that people need to be realistic, but that's not their fault if they have been given the impression that they have absolute power to do a 180 just like that, just on the basis of emotion. So we need to make sure that people understand that they can put forward changes, that they can see a real difference based on what they are saying about how our club should be run, but that is going to be an incremental change. That's not going to be something that is going to be able to be just, you know, completely changed overnight.
I agree. I think you know, there's a lot of things that we need to be done about our communications. I think the DTB website needs an overhaul as well. It needs to really show about where we as the fans sit within the DTB and the process that are in place, because I think that's still very unclear for a lot of people. Personally, I think that the communicating through pro boards, I think is a difficult way to be engaging when most people are using other forms of social media to communicate. So people feel a slightly distance from the DTB. And I'm hoping that we have a decentist turnout when it comes to the elections coming up as well, because I think that's always something that is thrown at us, which I just find tedious, because I think when you look at other elections, the turnouts, certainly in local council, local government elections, the turnouts can be incredibly low. Anyhow, lads, listen, I think we've done our time. We could talk about all this sort of stuff for a long time. It's been great. Enjoy the game this evening. Anyone going to Morecambe, I wish you the best of luck this weekend as well. And remember, we've got the FA Cup coming up on the 5th of November. I'm now going to choke to death. Thank you very much to listening to the Same Old Wombles. I've been joined by the lovely Alex Folks, my brother Niall Cooper. I'm Matt Cooper. Come on, you dons.